Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the germ theory in Scripture right after this. You know, the modern science of medicine sets a high value upon prophylaxis. And to us of this generation, prevention means more than cure. It would be mere folly even to suggest that Moses in the 15th century before Christ knew anything at all about the germ theory of disease. In our generation, however, this so-called germ theory is no longer just a theory, it's now an established fact. Teeming in our atmosphere, found on dust, in water, permeating all of our foods, and contaminating every physical substance on the planet, there are uncountable myriads of pathogenic organisms that cause suffering and sickness in the human body. These tiny creatures that are classified as germs, bacteria, or bacilli are so infinitely microscopic that the human eye cannot possibly apprehend them unless they're magnified by the lens of a high-powered microscope. In fact, most of them are visible only through an oil immersion lens, which increases their magnitude by many diameters. It is totally impossible that any human being could have known of the presence of these disease-causing organisms until the great Louis Pasteur established their reality in the face of the opposition of almost every man of science of his generation. These organisms are visible only through the microscope, and until this aid to man's research was invented and well-nigh perfected, the bacteria remained totally unknown. But now that we know of their existence, and now that we have the science of bacteriology that studies their very nature, substance structure, and organization, physicians almost make a fetish of this thing called prophylaxis. Undoubtedly, the reader has seen surgeons preparing to enter the operating theater, the first stage in their preparation after they have gowned themselves rather in the white robe and covered their hair with a surgical cap. They spend 20 minutes washing their hands from the fingertips to the elbows with our old familiar friend green soap, with a scrubbing brush, hot water, and this slimy substance. The surgeon scrubs and works and rinses and scrubs again until his hands are as nearly sterile as they can be. These clean hands are then wrapped in a sterile towel that they might not be contaminated by the air. And then the nurse binds over the doctor's mouth and nose a sterile gauze pad. Now the patient, having been made ready for the incision, the sterilized instruments are taken out of the sterilizing machine, and then the doctor bends to make his incision of mercy. Perhaps the most important step in all of this prophylaxis is the gauze pad that the nurse has bound over his mouth and nose, because many of these pathogenic organisms ride invisibly on the human breath, and the doctor who is operating upon some patient whose life he hopes to save might breathe infection into that open wound without the aid of that pad over his mouth and nose. These tiny organisms, however, cannot pass through the members of the layers of dry and filmy gauze that constitute this pad, but rather they're trapped and rendered innocuous. Now, there was an element of intelligence, at least, in the sanitation law that caused all of us to walk around during the dread epidemic of influenza during World War I, wearing what was commonly known as a flu mask. Someday, an intelligent generation will force all who have that weird contagion called the common cold to wear just such a public protective measure when they venture out among their fellow men. This custom, of course, of protecting the innocent from infection by the use of the white cloth is a highly modern method of preventive medicine, and it is based upon the certainty that pathogenic organisms do cause disease in the human body. Well, how then can we account on purely human grounds for the use of this same method for the prevention of infection and disease in the days of Moses? In the 30th chapter of Leviticus and the 45th verse, we have a record of a contagious disease, particularly repulsive to the people of that time. And among other methods for the prevention of the spread of this infection, the law of God, as given through Moses, contained the injunction that the infected man must bind a cloth across his upper lip, exactly as the physician in the hospital wears the mask today. Now, there's a quarantine portion to this in Numbers 5, verses 1 through 4. Quarantine, where you actually take sick people, people who are diagnosed with some ailment or disease, and then separate them from the rest of the people around them. How did Moses know about quarantine and about this mask on the upper lip? Could Moses have known the germ theory of disease? Well, not unless he had a microscope that was remarkably modern in its equipment and powers, in which case Moses then, and not Louis Pasteur, should be the titular deity of modern medicine. If, however, Moses really spoke by the inspiration of the Spirit of God and transmitted to us only those things which he in turn had received, then we have a sensible explanation for this marvelous anticipation of modern wisdom in this ancient book called the Scripture. And there's another example of science in the Bible, the germ theory recorded in the Scripture.